As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This podcast is brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Get your TV together with the best of live and on-demand. Learn more at DirecTV.com.
The culture is the culture. It's 4-6-A to B, competitive excellence, and the brotherhood. The plan to win has never changed. So the culture here and the plan to win is always going to be here at Ohio State.
Welcome back to 4-6 with A&B, your Ohio State podcast brought to you by The Athletic. This is Bill Landis joined by Papa Ari. Ari, how's dad life?
Buddy, I'm doing okay. The thing that's funny about dad life is that taking care of the infant is the easy part. You feed her, you change her diaper, you let her get cleaned up, she naps. 3-hour increments, it's the same thing over and over again. 3-hour nap, feed, clean her up, change diaper, new clothes, nap. It's all the other crap that you have to do during that 3 hours that's terrible. And then also, in the middle of the night, the every 3 hours thing is kind of a rough go of it. So we've had her, Britt's mother here. She's been a tremendous help. We've got a little shift system going right now. The baby's in the middle of a nap right now, so we get the podcast in. But I'll say, a few days after she was born, I was in a hospital room, and I was watching football for 13 straight hours. Because all we had to do was just chill with the baby and let mom recover. And, you know, I was so deep in that Rutgers game. I wasn't tweeting, but I was very aware of it. So I'm very excited to talk about it. And I had a little FOMO when I was listening to you and Max, and I was supposed to be on the show then. And I had to bail at the last second, believe it or not. And you know, I'm hoping that won't happen again. So thanks for bearing with me on my schedule. And, you know, I'm very excited to see where this team goes and where this podcast goes. Because, buddy, I, like, left as a non-father, and now I came back to to being a father and talking about the most talented division in college football. What the hell is going on here? There's 5 teams ranked in the top 11 in the Big Ten right now, and 4 of them are in the Big Ten East. Is that right?
4 of them are in the East. That's right. That's right.
Okay, can I just ask you a question right off the bat? How many of those teams are trash? Like, let's just be honest. Like, is Michigan trash, State not trash? Like, I mean, okay, top 40 maybe, but they're not a top 10 team, are they?
No, I don't think Michigan State or Michigan are top 10 teams. I think Penn State might be. I think Iowa it probably is because that defense is pretty good. But no, it's the way the schedule broke out. They haven't lost. Someone's got to be ranked somewhere. Like I get why they're ranked that highly, but I don't. And I tried to ask Max that the other day. Like I don't look at the Big Ten East and think, "Ooh, Murderer's Row, toughest division in college football," but the rankings will tell you that it is. So, and it's the Ohio State's benefit that it looks that way right now, because I don't think they're going to lose any of those teams.
Yes, yes. But so, like, the thing about it is, and I'm very curious to get into how I feel about Rutgers, because I know that I'm sure that the listeners were more than content without me there, but, like, I want to go on record. Like, I think this team is going to figure it out now. And, like, I don't know. I always say, like, oh, my God, they're going to play a bunch of crappy teams. I'm not going to fall into the trap again. and then I fall back into the trap. But if you listen, I know they're deeply flawed. I think they're very, very much worse than Alabama, Georgia right now. But the way that the season is setting up, now Oregon lost their best player. So if they lose again or lose and their season goes in the tank, you can say, well, they lost Verdell. There's a built-in excuse there for, you know, defending the quality of loss that that was. And then you have a potential to, what, win four games, maybe five, against teams that are ranked in the top 15 between now and then, and none of them are particularly good. Like, when you think about the way that Ohio State's schedule sets up, they're in a very good position if they take care of business and figure out what the hell's going on with their defense, and then getting some confidence for their quarterback and letting things ride, to be a very, very likable team at the end of the year resume-wise. So I'm very curious, and I'm actually curious to hear what you have to say about this, but you basically just, you're out on Michigan. Was that because of what happened with Rutgers and Ohio State, or like where you're like, they're not a top 10 team. Like you're in a situation where Penn State's in, Iowa's in, but Michigan is firmly out.
Yeah. Like I think two things, and maybe they sound counterproductive. Like, I think Michigan is better than I thought it would be this year. And I do think that Jim Harbaugh has done a good job of turning that around and getting it going in a positive direction. But I still don't look at that team and see a top 10 team. They haven't really played anybody yet. Like they beat a bad Washington team. They beat what is a bad Wisconsin team this year. And I give them credit for like vanquishing some demons there against Wisconsin.
But is it the wins? Is it the wins or is it the look?
No, it's both. It's both. Like I'm not, again, you got to rank the team somewhere and Michigan hasn't lost. So like, I get it. I'm not saying they don't deserve to be where they are right now, but I'm talking about like, do I look at a team and like, do they look to me like a top 10 team? No, they don't. But I still think they're pretty good. I think they're probably at worst like a top 20 team, somewhere between 10 and 20, probably maybe 25. Certainly worthy of being ranked, and I think they'll be there the rest of the year. But I don't know. I've seen what a top 10 Michigan team looks like, and we saw one in 2016. Mm-hmm. This is not that, and I still think it's a team that's pretty limited offensively.
Yeah. Who are the undeniable playoff teams right now? You've got two, and that's it, right?
Yep. And I think Ohio State is trending that direction as good as you can feel about that when they've really only played Rutgers.
Okay, how about I ask it this way? Because, like, listen, circumstance and context is just as important as personal growth and development, I think, in this scenario. Because when you're a one-loss team that early in the season, you need the narrative and the way people view you to change as you continue on into October and November. And I think that's going to continue to happen because Ohio State's going to get clout. Fake good wins, but that you get clout with those fake good wins, right?
I don't think they're fake good wins. I wouldn't go that. Like, I don't think any of these teams are bad teams. I think Michigan State, and Penn State are all good.
When I say that,
you will get more credit maybe than you should because of the number next to their name, but they're still good teams.
No, I'm not trying to say that. I think fake good wins. Thank you for clarifying that for me. I mean, they're going to get top 10 credit against teams that aren't actually top 10 teams.
Yeah.
So,
but that happens all the time.
Yeah, it happens all the time, but not four times in a year. Usually Ohio State's schedule is just like, okay, big non-conference game, and then wake me up at the Michigan game. Or the Penn State game in late October, and then that's it. Like, Nebraska all of a sudden's playing well, and like actually might beat Michigan on Saturday, if you like read between the lines of that spread.
It's an interesting game.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen there. Like, last week when Michigan was a two-point dog against Wisconsin, I was just like, where's our baby's birth certificate so I can fax it into my bookie? Like, that made no sense to me because you're talking about a Wisconsin team that, what, averages like 9 points in conference play the last 2 years?
Just totally broken.
Yeah. But, like, this game I wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole.
What's the spread?
Three.
Michigan's laying three.
They're favored by 3 points.
In Lincoln?
Yes.
Yeah. Nebraska, I think I said this on the thing with Max the other day, like Nebraska's underlying numbers would make you think that their record should be much better than it is right now. And I thought they were going to go in the tank. They have not.
Plus Michigan's one-dimensional offense.
Yep. No, I think the ceiling gets raised there if they put J.J. McCarthy in, and it seems like they're leaving that door open a little bit. I don't know. Like, they're putting them in the game. So I don't know. But as long as Kay McNamara is the quarterback there, I think that offense, like you said, is pretty one-dimensional.
Yeah, I mean, losing Ronnie Bell, too, was a pretty big loss. I mean, that guy was a stud. Was. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm very excited. I am rooting for the Big Ten East.
I think it's fun.
I just want it to be fun.
I'm glad that the Big Ten East is fun and interesting at a time where Ohio State is like trying to figure some stuff out and is maybe less vulnerable than I thought they were 2 weeks ago, but I think it's still vulnerable because they're still, you know, they've made not insignificant changes to their defense and have yet to play a good offensive opponent since doing that. So I still think that's up in the air.
If you're an Ohio State fan, what would you rather have? Super entertaining games against Penn State, Michigan, and maybe Michigan State. I don't know if the schedule is going to allow that to happen because they play each other before they play Ohio State. Or would you rather the Big Ten East just go back to being what we thought it was and then Iowa being badass and awesome at the end of the year in the Big Ten championship game? I guess what would you rather watch as a sports fan? And what do you think would be better for Ohio State's playoff resume?
I think it's better for Ohio State's playoff resume to play nationally relevant games, and they're going to.
Nationally relevant or more nationally relevant to beat a team that controls its own destiny in the final week of the season to get into the playoff like Iowa would in that scenario?
No, I would combine it all into one thing, I guess. Would you rather just skate through like normally do and not play the game that matters until the very end?
I'm saying, like, would you rather Nebraska beat Michigan and Iowa beat Penn State and Michigan and Michigan State knock each other out, and Penn State and Michigan knock each other out, and then like have a bunch of pretty solid teams, but nothing great. And then at the end of the year, you have an Iowa team that people view as a potential national championship contender and then beat them? Or would you rather like Penn State beat Iowa and set up a solid game in the middle of October, at the end of October? Michigan have one or two losses at most at the end of the year. Michigan State being viewed as a pretty good team and then facing a team with one or two losses at the end of the season.
I'm not so sure like all those common opponent games matter. Like, and Ohio State plays Nebraska too, so I guess they're a common opponent. But I guess you want Michigan to beat Nebraska because Nebraska ultimately I just don't think is going to end up being a ranked team. It may be better, but they're not going to be a team that's part of the national conversation. But if like Michigan State and Michigan and Penn State, obviously you're like beat up on each other, but they all kind of look the same and competitive in that. Like, I don't really think that matters all that much. I just think you need people to believe that those are good teams. And right now, people believe that those are good teams. And I believe they're good teams, too. I just don't know if, like, Michigan State is actually the number 11 team in the country.
Well, it's actually possible that they are, and the rest of the team, the country just sucks.
It's like, that's also possible, yeah. Like, and I was pretty out on Michigan State. I've already been wrong on Michigan State because I was very out on them coming into the year because I just didn't think that Mel Tucker had up the talent level on that roster in the way that he clearly has. So
through the portal too.
Through the portal, yeah.
And that's the thing too about that is what Mel Tucker did, what we thought was this was the Mark D'Antonio strategy. Developmental guys, 3-4 years, every 3-4 year cycle, you're really, really good. But like I think you can make the case that Mel Tucker is the poster child for how the portal is going to change the sport.
Yeah, I think
you're right. I don't know how Kenneth Walker just fell out of the sky. This guy is awesome.
I was about to say he's the best running back in the Big Ten, but he's not because Trevion Henderson.
Second
best running back in the Big Ten.
I know we got to talk about Ohio State here, but this is just like this is fun for me because like I mean, dude, this season is really fun.
This season's great. This season it has like 2007-ish vibes, I think. But it's mostly fun because I like the Big Ten is interesting.
And if you would have asked me in July, is 2007 ever going to happen again? I would have said no.
Yeah.
Because like I thought that everything that was happening at the top of the sport, like especially if Texas beats Oklahoma this weekend, which is a distinct possibility, then you have another conference that's potentially eliminated. I mean, you have right now the way the season's setting up, the potential that the Big Ten and the SEC both could get two teams in, and that'd be the end of it.
More disrespect to the Bearcats, man. It's unbelievable.
Well, I actually believe that if there's ever going to be a year where a group of five team gets in, that Cincinnati, this is it. But I think that you might get into, and this is October 7th. There's a lot of football to be played. But I think if you're not paying close attention to BYU,
yeah,
if they're both undefeated at the end of the year and they don't play each other, I think it would be like, we can't choose between these two. Let's just go all Power Five again. You're going to have a TCU-Baylor scenario again. Seriously. Because like if you go look at their schedules, like Cincinnati has some top-heavy wins because they beat Indiana, but Indiana's dog crap now. And Notre Dame is not very good. And I think they're going to lose to Virginia Tech on Saturday. And those wins as like you would think if I would have said before the end of the year, if Cincinnati beats both Indiana and Notre Dame, which you'll fondly remember I predicted. And I don't think I'm smart. I just think that it was just like they're really good. That would be enough to open the conversation. Add that into the fact that Clemson's not even going to win the ACC, maybe. And the Pac-12 is the Pac-12, and Oklahoma looks bad. It's like, okay, well, what else do you need in that scenario? But go look at BYU's schedule, dude. They play a Power 5 schedule this year. I think they've got seven Power 5 teams on their schedule, and none of them are very good, but they close out, they opened up the season with three Pac-12 wins in a row, including, I believe, Arizona State, which is a very good football team right now, apparently, and they end on the road at USC. Like, that's an undefeated Power 5 team. If you were to compare those two resumes, assuming that Cincinnati wins out and BYU finishes undefeated, it's just like, how do you pick between those two things? Do you prefer the team that has the two sexier wins? Hell, I don't think that beating Indiana is sexier than beating Arizona State. So do you take the Notre Dame win, and that's the thing that props up your discussion about it, or do you go with the team that's played seven Power 5 opponents?
Yeah, BYU, I don't know how we got to talking about BYU, but yeah, they've beaten three Pac-12 teams, UCF, Utah State. They play Boise this weekend. They play Baylor after that. Play Virginia and play USC, as you mentioned.
They beat Utah, didn't they?
They beat Utah. They beat Utah when Utah was ranked at the time, yeah.
So
and Arizona State was ranked when, and I think Arizona State's still ranked. Yeah, that's a good point. What kind of suck for if you're Cincinnati to like do like finally do the thing that like the committee has been asking a G5 team to do since the playoffs started, and they go out and they play Power 5 teams and they beat them, they're clearly better than them, and then at the end of the year they'll be like, oh yeah, but those Power 5 teams weren't good enough.
I think Cincinnati's only hope to making the playoff this year, because like last year I said I'm not doing this shit again, we're talking about Group of 5 teams and making the playoff, and it's just like Notre Dame loses two more times, I'm done. Like that's the thing, like Cincinnati's playoff resume right now is strong because they're coming off of a win at Notre Dame, but if Notre Dame loses to Virginia Tech on Saturday, it's like it lasted a week, right? Like Cincinnati needs Notre Dame to be awesome. So okay, let's get back to Ohio State. All right, I'm sorry about that. I'm just excited. I'm amped up.
No, it's okay. I think it's interesting.
But one other thing I wanted to say, I want to get you on the record here. Look at me in my eyes. Iowa by 15 this weekend.
Iowa by 15?
I mean, I'm not going to change the spread. The spread's 3, I think. I think Iowa covers that easily.
I can get behind Iowa winning that game, certainly. It's in Iowa City. Penn State hasn't beaten a top 10 team on the road since the Nixon okay. administration. Yeah. It just seems like a wide margin to me. I think it's a very tight game.
Yeah.
To me, it feels like a tight game that Penn State is in position to win, and then the James Franklin late game clock management magic strikes, and Iowa somehow gets the ball back when it shouldn't have it, and that's how Iowa wins.
2016, the final score. Ohio State, or the year that Penn State won the Big Ten East, loss at number 4 Michigan 49-10. 2017, loss at number 6 Ohio State and loss to number 24 Michigan State in consecutive weeks. 2018, loss at Ohio State number 4. Loss at number 5, Michigan, 42-7 in November a few weeks later. 2019, they lost that Minnesota game in November when they needed a win, and Minnesota was undefeated. And then lost 2 weeks later on the road to Ohio State, who was number 2 at the time. 2020, they lost half their schedule, and it's just like they can't win that game. They haven't won that game, that marquee road Big Ten matchup, I don't think one time, unless I'm forgetting something earlier on in the James Franklin era, once. And like now, Iowa's defense is actually badass, and now we think that Sean Clifford's turned this thing around. The only thing that I could say about Penn State off the top of my head that would give me an advantage in their mind is that they're the only team that has a receiver that can get behind a defense. Like Jahan Dotson is really, really, really good, but I think Iowa's defense is like bona fide awesome, and I don't think Penn State's going on the road and beating anybody with a bona fide awesome defense.
I think it's fair. I think it's all fair. It's the margin for me. If you want to say you believe in your heart,
I think they're going to cover
100%.
You know how I've got a
even that. I mean, a cover I can get behind too. It's only 3 points, but a two touchdown win for either team, I just don't see happening.
Yeah,
I don't think either team is built unless Sean Clifford pulls a Talia Tagovailoa and throws Iowa the ball 5 times. Then I'll get behind that. But
also Maryland played the worst. That was the first college football game my newborn baby witnessed. And she wanted to go back in the womb. She's like, put me back in.
Put me back in.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Okay, so let me ask you, Bill, where are you at? Because it's been over a week since we've talked. Are you completely back in on Ohio State's ability to reassert itself as a national championship contender? Like, do you think they've got the personnel and the scheme together, you know, to be in that position, or are we still beat Penn State and we'll talk about it?
I'm pretty well back in. I don't know if I'm all the way back in, like, because I'm just a little hesitant because of Akron and Rutgers, but I do think that this coaching staff has figured out this roster, and I think that was a little easier with the offense, just like kind of let them go do their thing. And I think we're starting to see that. I thought the offense we saw against Rutgers was tailored much more to CJ Stroud's strengths, and the defense has like changed rather dramatically. Like they went from a single high cover three, cover one defense to like a heavy dose of two high cover two stuff, and like it almost feels like that's their base defense now, and they're blitzing a lot more, and
it seems
guys are settling in the roles. Like I think they're figuring it out.
You're Mr. X's and O's. It seems to me like they've changed from like skim milk and went to 2%. Like, it's not that drastic of a change, but it feels drastic.
Yeah, it's still milk, yeah.
Like, it's not like they had Bill Nye the Science Guy in there trying to figure out what to do. It was a very rudimentary change, it seems like.
Correct.
But then it makes me even more concerned that they needed to lose to identify that problem when that was the fix all along. And then when you start putting yourself in that position, then it's just like, well, then how confident are you in this coaches to recognize that there's another issue down the road? Because to me, making a fix is super important for a coaching staff. It's absolutely imperative to be able to identify your weaknesses and then do something to make them less weakness worthy.
Yeah.
But then there's also the other side of the coin of just like, how did we get to this point? And then at that point, if you allow yourself to think, well, how do we get to this point? Then it's just like, well, what the hell is under the hood that we're not seeing now? And that's how I think about it.
Yeah.
Maybe not something that's going to be exposed until they play a really good team. But like, I think that the ceiling for this football team is making the playoff. I don't think that they have a higher ceiling than that. I think they're very good. I think their offense can score with anybody, maybe the best offense in college football. I do not think that this defense will ever be able to beat Alabama.
So I don't... Georgia, to me, I think would be a little more concerning. We don't have to break down the thing. Yeah. Like I don't know. Alabama, to me, seems a little bit gettable, although I did say they were going to lose to Ole Miss, and then they blew Ole Miss's doors off. Georgia's defense is like the best thing I've seen since I've been watching college football, and I'm 32 years old. So like that is scary to me. Alabama's a little less scary to me. But either way, I think you're right. I still think the ceiling is more or less the same as I thought it was after the Oregon loss, and that is they can still make the college football playoff. I think how that looks on the road there is going to look probably substantially better than I thought it could look coming off the Oregon game. And that is to say, like, I don't think that this defense is just going to be a defense that gives up explosive play after explosive play after explosive play and like can't pull its head out of its own ass once a team does something twice and beats them with the same thing over and over again. Like, I don't think that's going to happen. So
I got a news flash for you though, bud.
What?
Oregon blows. So I don't know if that's a harsh way of saying it, but like we were saying on this podcast since the day Ohio State lost that game that Oregon will lose. And it's like, did you see that game? It's like their quarterback isn't very good.
Yeah, but their quarterback also was like, Ohio State didn't lose to Oregon because Anthony Brown was like slicing them up. Ohio State lost to Oregon because Oregon ran the same play four times and scored on two of them.
I'm just saying, like, at a certain point, you got to start analyzing how it's even possible to lose to a team that's not very good. It's not like they lost a heavyweight battle with another team that's going to be in the play. They lost to a marginal Pac-12 team.
No, Oregon's better than that. You're wrong on that. I don't think Oregon was ever a championship caliber team. But Oregon doesn't suck.
I think they're a two or three loss team in the Pac-12.
I don't. If they keep losing guys, then they probably will become that because they keep losing guys every week. They've like lost, I think, like four starters since they played Ohio State. So maybe that happens, but I don't.
I'm just saying, like the team that came into Ohio Stadium, the team that came into Ohio Stadium and beat Ohio State is not a team that's good enough, that a team that should be good enough to come close to beating that team. Like that was a major coaching malpractice in that game.
Yeah, I agree with that. But coaching malpractice, I feel like should be analyze a little differently than like just matching up man for man. Like I don't think Ohio State is suffering from a tremendous talent deficit that should make you nervous moving forward. I think they had clear coaching issues to get past, and I'm not saying they've gotten past them already, but I think there have been promising steps taken in the right
direction. The talent isn't what scares me, Bill. What scares me is that you have a coaching staff that is susceptible to getting its butt kicked with X's and O's against a team that is lacking tremendously in talent in comparison to Ohio State, and then putting them on the same field as teams that are very, very good later on down the line when you think something is fixed and then, oh my God, here we go again, which is definitely going to happen if they play Alabama or Georgia, I think. Now,
yeah, I mean, that could happen when they play Alabama or Georgia, but I don't look at any team they have left to play on their schedule and think that there's a team that is a significant step up offensively from what Oregon was. I think they're basically the same.
Do you think Ohio State is going to be undefeated from here on out, or would you take 0.5 losses over?
I think they're undefeated from here on out.
Because, like, I don't know if I'm 100% with you on that. I'm not saying you're wrong. I don't know that I'm confident in saying that.
Honestly, when I look ahead, the only thing that gives me pause is the potential matchup against Iowa's defense in the Big Ten Championship. And if that defense is as good as we think it is and can hold Ohio State to under like 35 points. And then if they can, then maybe that game gets a little sweaty. But I just don't look at Michigan State and Penn State and think like those teams are going to get Ohio State. I just don't think they're built for it. I don't think they're built to score enough to do it. Even if Ohio State's defense
But Oregon is.
No, Oregon's not. But Ohio State's defense is like drastically different from when it was in the Oregon. They're playing a totally different style of defense right now.
So what you're saying is lay the points this weekend?
Well, I want to get to that.
Okay, let's get to it.
Yeah.
I fired you up a little bit. Did you miss me?
Yeah, of course I missed you.
I miss you too, bud.
I think I wrote a mailbag that went up on Thursday where I said that like I was kind of curious about this matchup with Maryland, because I think Maryland might be built to expose Ohio State's defense if, in fact, it's not fixed. But I think like that might not be true.
Hey, can I pivot on you before we get to it? Because we're only 25 minutes in. I thought your story was really good about Ryan Day, and I didn't finish the Max podcast, but did you talk about that yet?
The
quarterback story.
No, we didn't talk
about that. Let's talk about that for a second, because it was really, really good, and I think it's interesting to people. And considering the fact that we had a quarterback, maybe a made-up one, but we had a quarterback controversy 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Why don't you go ahead and take them through it? And if you're not subscribed to The Athletic, I encourage you to do that. Bill's story was one-on-one with Ryan Day discussing his philosophy on recruiting the quarterback position, and I thought it was really good, really well done.
Thanks. Yeah, I guess I don't want to give away too much of what Ryan Day said because I would want people to go read it at theathletic.com/4-6 and get subscribed and go find the story. But you know, Ohio, I went and looked it up. Like, Ohio State has signed 3 of the 15 highest-rated quarterbacks in the last 3 recruiting classes, C.J. Stroud, Kyle McCord, and Quinn Ewers. I think everyone's aware of that. And I just had to sit down with Ryan Day about why he chooses to go about it that way and not do the every-other-year thing that, like, Clemson does, that Oklahoma does. There's really no other team that kind of does it Ohio State's way. I think Alabama has come close to doing that. I think Texas A&M is attempting to do that. But even if you go beyond sort of which guys' programs have landed thus far and look ahead to what they're doing in the future, I still think Ohio State does it differently because they had all these guys in the program and they still took a swing at Drew Aller. And they're still going after a guy like Dylan Lonergan, who's a top 100 quarterback in the class of 2023, and some other highly rated guys in that class. And they're like all over Jaden Davis, who's the top player in the class of 2024. Like, they are not altering their quarterback recruiting plan in any way whatsoever, despite the fact that they have 3 5-star prospects on the roster already. And it's just like, it kind of blows my mind a little bit that they recruit that position that aggressively. And I just don't think anybody does it that way. So I didn't have a ton of time with Ryan Day. I had like 15 minutes with him and 5 of it were spent talking about some other stuff. But I felt like we did get a little deep into why he does it that way. And I thought it was really enlightening conversation with Ryan Day. And the gist of it was like, you just can't be certain. And he said at the NFL, he said teams draft quarterbacks in the first round all the time, and they're wrong a lot. And he just doesn't want to leave Ohio State in a position where if he's wrong with the guys he's recruiting at the most important position, that Ohio State would be negatively impacted by that. And he didn't say this directly, but as I was going back through the interview, like, I thought of Clemson and their every other year approach. And I was like, Trevor Lawrence was a stud. Deshaun Watson was a stud. DJ Uiagalelei might not be a stud. He doesn't look like one right now, and Clemson's suffering part because of that. Their offense is terrible. And I think that's the kind of thing that worries Ryan Day is if he goes every other year and the guy that he has step into the spot after the previous starter leaves just isn't ready, you're kind of screwed. And you can't be screwed when the expectation is win a national championship. So there's more to it than that. I encourage you to go read the story, but I did enjoy getting, 5 to 8 minutes with Ryan Day to talk about that a little bit in depth.
Can I make a leap here and you tell me if you think I'm crazy?
Absolutely.
Did Ryan Day just say stars matter?
He certainly said stars matter. I think Ryan Day is a true believer in the stars matter mantra.
Because the philosophy, while I agree with it, also is a deep implication that if you recruit a 3-star prospect, you can't make up for being wrong with the 5-star.
Yeah.
Because the idea that we've talked about when it came to recruiting quarterbacks was, you just don't take 2 5-stars consecutively, but you still could take a top 400 quarterback that still might be very good.
Yeah, just so you have like a warm body in your quarterback room.
A warm body that actually might be able to produce one day.
Yeah, like a Joe Burrow. Yeah, Joe Burrow was not quite that low, but
Joe Burrow is a good example because he wasn't a 5-star quarterback. He was a 4-star from Ohio, but like just because you're recruiting only 5-star quarterbacks or top 100 players doesn't mean that you can't still recruit really good players every single year. They just don't fit the same megastar system, you know? Mm-hmm. So to me, it's like I heard when I read your story as if he's not a top 100 player, then they're going to miss, and we need to get as many top 100 players in here as possible because we don't want to be wrong. So I thought it was a really good story. I thought the way you wrote it was really interesting. You let him speak. And I think that anybody who is subscribed to The Athletic should read that. And if you're not, you should first read, rate, and review how happy you are that I'm back on the show. Because we could use all the ratings and reviews as we can, but also subscribe to The Athletic and go read that. So now on to Maryland.
Okay, I got a stat for you here.
Hit me with it.
Taulia Tagovailoa.
I know the stat. I saw it on Twitter.
Maryland's quarterback has made 9 career starts.
Oh, that's not the stat.
Six of them were what I would consider bad teams. 3 of them have been against what I would consider good teams. Against the bad teams, again, 6 games, Taulia has completed 74% of his passes for over 2,000 yards, almost 10 yards per attempt, 15 touchdowns, and 2 interceptions. He's been incredible against the bad teams. Against the good teams, which are Northwestern last year, Indiana last year, and Iowa last week, he is completing 52% of his passes for less than 500 yards, fewer than 500 yards, 5 yards per attempt, 3 touchdowns, and 11 interceptions.
Well, I mean, that stat is certainly like lopsided based on what happened on Friday. I mean, how many picks did he throw on Friday night alone?
He threw 5.
I saw a stat on the internet during the game. I think I might have texted it to you in the middle of the game. Didn't he like come in with the fewest interceptions in the country, and then like when the game was over, he had the most or something?
Yeah, I thought I said that to Max earlier in the week because I thought I saw him to tweet it out, but it was like something like only 2 quarterbacks had fewer interceptions than Taulia coming into the Iowa game, and then like he had more than like 125 quarterbacks after the game or something like that.
I will say
more eloquently than I just put it.
It took me back to when you and I were in Iowa and we were at the casino and you bet on Maryland against Penn State and it was like 65-0 or something crazy. And I had to hit my only royal flush in video poker, mind you.
That was great. Sitting at the bar next to you, that royal flush comes up. I was very happy.
Dude, I hit the royal flush without deuces, without having to hold any cards.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. I thought there was like a glitch in the machine there. They were like, no, you can't. You don't win this.
Easiest $1,200 I ever won in my life. I just felt like a jackass or playing quarters instead of dollars. But maybe it's just that they don't play well with expectations, which is your mantra. Use what you texted me earlier. But it's just like, I can't figure out, does Maryland suck ass? Or do they just like, are they just inconsistent? Because I will say, and again,
they're certainly inconsistent.
prone to hyperbolic statements. I know that that's how I am. And partially because I fell into the Maryland trap financially. Because that line made zero sense. Yeah. And like I was like, I should just bet everything I have on Iowa, and I can't tell you how many times I've lost games because of lines that don't make sense. So I thought
I bet Iowa. I was in New Jersey where you bet Iowa? Sports betting apps. Yeah, I took the booster on DraftKings that gave me up to Iowa +8.5. I was like, yeah, I'll take that.
Okay. Well, I thought that the line or -8.5, the line made so little sense that I bet against Iowa because I thought it didn't make any sense and Vegas knew something that I didn't know. That didn't work out that way. Obviously, I will say that yes, Iowa beat the crap out of Maryland, but I don't think I've seen a team play worse for four quarters of my entire life. And like, I actually made a joke to Britt, which she was laying in the hospital bed next to me, recovering from giving birth. And I said, "Do you think this is a health hazard for our baby?" And like, she wasn't even paying attention. She doesn't know what's going on. And I'm just like, this is embarrassing.
Yeah.
Personal foul penalties, turnovers, false starts, dumbass play calling. Like, the entire gamut of what could go wrong for a team, I think, went wrong for them. And it didn't. It was unrelenting.
Yeah. I didn't watch second half because I didn't really feel
the need. Because you were counting your money?
I didn't really feel the need to. Talia had no idea what he was looking at. I don't know what. It wasn't like, oh, man, bad luck. It was like that dude didn't like had looked like he never played football before. I couldn't believe some of the passes he was attempting that were getting picked off. And he does that when they play good defenses. So I don't know if Ohio State's defense is good, but I don't think they're terrible. And I wonder if Tully is just going to throw Ohio State the ball a bunch and Ohio State's going to cover this 20.5-point spread rather easily.
I like keying in on some of the things that you say in passing. Did you think they were terrible when they were playing Tulsa?
No.
Defense?
I didn't think they were terrible when they were playing Tulsa. I think they were like mid semi significant transition against Tulsa, so like I almost don't really care.
Okay, how about this? Do you think they were terrible against it? Was there ever a point in time this year where you thought Ohio State's defense was terrible?
Yeah, against Oregon.
So what is it that has made you change your mind then? Would you say it's more personnel based or would you say that it's more schematically based?
It's definitely a mix of both, but probably more schematically based.
But so then with the personnel, because we already discussed the schematics of it, but what is it about the personnel then that you – that has
less
you
– less rotating. I think putting guys in – just less rotating. Like not playing guys who like clearly aren't ready to be out there. Or maybe it's that guys who were out there and looked lost in the first two games are like starting to settle into some stuff, but – but I think it's a little more of the former there. Like I think of like Cameron Martinez not playing at all, and then all of a sudden he's your starting cover safety after you get your doors blown or not your doors blown off by Oregon, but lose to Oregon. Like they made a personnel decision there to play Cameron Martinez moving forward. I think you've seen more of Cody Simon and Taraja Mitchell, like the guys we thought were their best linebackers. I think you're seeing them more and more. Corner's weird because Cameron Brown's injury, but like we don't see Legend Cavazos out there, like just a guy who clearly was not ready to be playing early on in the season. He's just like not part of the deal anymore. He doesn't play unless the game's out of hand. So I think they've pared down the rotations a little bit and have guys in better positions to be successful. For instance, like not sticking Bryson Shaw in the middle of the field by himself so often, where I think he's not as comfortable as he would be when he's playing in a too high shell and playing a little more cover two and doesn't have quite that burden on him to be the guy at the back of the defense that's kind of your security blanket. So It's a lot of things, but I think it's mostly like figuring out the scheme that these players best fit into.
You think it's funny that two of Ohio State's best defensive backs are from Arizona?
Well, Arizona is a hotbed of football.
I just was thinking about that when Denzel Burke was running it the touchdown in last week. It's just like, this is why the Pac-12 sucks.
But even that play, like, I think people might look at that play and say, like, oh, well, Noah Vedral just threw the ball to Denzel Burke. And, like, he did, but I think he did because Ohio State was in a cover two look that it hasn't played a ton this year. And Cameron Martinez, who was playing an underneath zone where he probably wouldn't be otherwise, like, got jumped into a throwing lane and Noah Vedral hesitated. He pump faked and he sailed the ball because he had to throw it over Cameron Martinez's head. And then he threw it too high and he threw it right to Denzel Burke. So it's like, it's not just that a quarterback made a dumb play and threw the ball the wrong way.
Yeah, schematics can produce
that. Ohio State's defense, like, helped produce, like, their structure helped lead to that.
And I think that's what you could say about what Iowa did to Maryland.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think that's true. Yeah. Because it's I have not. I am writing like a deep dive on the defense and like what's changed and like with harder numbers and stuff like that. And that'll probably run next week during the bye week because I'll have more time for it. But part of it is just making life just a tad more difficult on the opposing quarterback so that what he sees before the snap is not the exact same thing that he sees after the snap, which is happening far too often against Ohio State's defense starting last year than the first two games of this year. And it's like it's a rather simple thing of like changing the picture on the quarterback, but Ohio State's finally doing it, and I think it's paying dividends.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so prediction time.
The last time these teams played, it was 73-14 Ohio State, 2019, the Chase Young game, meaning the game where everyone thought that Maryland dimed out Chase Young and then Ryan Day called an onside kick when they were up by 30. That was a great day.
But we had an emergency podcast that day. I had some friends in town.
Yeah.
And one of my friends woke me up and said, "Bro, I'm not trying to help you with your job, but Chase Young's in trouble and I think you should wake up."
Shout out to that friend.
Yeah, Rob Treya. Shout out.
Yeah, Rob Treya. All day, every day. I don't think it's going to be quite that, but I think Ohio State wins this one comfortably again because I think that they are headed back in the right direction. So my prediction is Ohio State 42, Maryland 17.
My prediction is 51-17. Yeah. I think they're going to get – here's the thing that I think has kind of changed the temperature of this year. And I didn't buy it against Akron, if you remember, but it looks like Ohio State. And
yeah.
If it looks like Ohio State, it kind of makes you feel better. And, you know, I know that there might be some check engine lights that could pop on here in the next few weeks when they're playing really good teams. But if Rutgers is a competent football team and Ohio State's dropping dimes on them like that, then this is the same type of 1-2 Maryland-Rutgers punch that we're used to. I expect Ohio State to drop a 50-burger out there. I think that these are very integral weeks for CJ Stroud to get, you know, in his bag a little bit more and to, you know, earn some more respect. And now that we can kind of pipe down a little bit about the quarterback controversy and just let the guy cook, you know, I think he's a chance. And guys, Ohio State's offense should be the best in college football. Like, it's all there. The line, the running back is actually done what we said he was going to do. The receivers are insanely good. There's no, even their tight ends are great. There's no weakness. At a certain point, they just have to impose their will on their overmatched opponents. They've done that the last 2 weeks. They're feeling themselves. I don't see any reason why that's not going to happen again.
What do you think of the total, 71?
Over. I think Ohio State's going to score into the 50s, and I don't know that I'm confident enough for Ohio State to keep Maryland out of the end zone a few times, especially late in the second half when it's... I think Ohio State first half play is, I mean, the spread's probably 10.5 or something like that. That, to me, is a pretty solid number. But I think Ohio State's going to win this comfortably. I think Maryland will score a few touchdowns. But I think if Ohio State scores in the 50s, they should be good.
Maryland will not have Dante Demas, who got hurt against
Iowa. He's really good.
He's their best receiver and one of the better receivers in the Big Ten. They still have Rakeem Jarrett. Still have Jayshon Jones. This is the best receiver tandem that Ohio State will have seen to this point. It's the best quarterback that Ohio State will have seen to this point. But I just don't trust Maryland in this situation at all to like turn it on and give Ohio State a game. So I think Ohio State wins comfortably.
Also, I asked Landis before I go, because I have to go. The baby's crying. I can hear her.
All right.
This is weird, man. Me being responsible for somebody else's life is truly bizarre. That's the weirdest thing about new fatherhood. It's like, if I hear her cry, or I'm tired and I don't feel like doing it, like, I don't have a choice anymore.
That's right.
There's no more snooze button. But I was like, you're getting some Utz, is it Utz or Utz?
Utz.
Utz, that's what I thought. Utz, pretzels, and chips. Landa says it's trash. What is, the game's home, right? So it doesn't really matter. But what is your best East Coast chip and why?
Hers.
Why?
And probably, I think hers is a little, I don't know. I don't know where hers and Utz are geographically. I just remember growing up with hers. I didn't eat Utz when I was a kid. I don't know why. I didn't like the taste. I think hers is has a better overall quality. The quality control at hers, I think, is better than it is at Utz. So okay. Hers is the move.
Hers and Utz are both in Pennsylvania. And there's something called Route 11 chips. I don't know if I've ever had those before, but that's also like in that same geographical area. Then you have Mike Sells, Jay's Kettle, Cape Cod up north. Mm-hmm. Have you seen the Zappos or Zaps?
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
And then Boulders and Poor Brothers are in like the Southwest. Tim's Potato Chips and Kettle Brand is Pacific Northwest. So, listen, I've never met a potato chip that I don't like, but I really like both of those. And Utz. Like you almost were like offended that I liked Utz.
Yeah. I think I get it. If you like Guts, you like Guts. Whatever, it's fine. It's
all good. A matter of preference. Hers is good too. I don't have any,
I just think hers is better.
What is the specific thing about the potato chip that you find to be better?
I like. I don't know if I'm going to describe this the correct way, but I like a thinner potato chip, like a thinner, crispier potato chip that is a little heavier on the salt. I think. And I think hers accomplishes that more regularly than Utz does.
It's weird to me because I liked baked reduced fat chips best because it's not as salty and it's less greasy.
That's weird.
I know, it's weird.
All the salt and grease you can handle.
Yeah. I like them all. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying like, and I used to be really, really, really into flavored chips. And like now the older I'm getting, cheese pizza and unflavored chips.
Wow. The palate is changing as you become a father. Oh, who knew? All right. Well, we'll let you get back to your crying baby. It was good to have you back.
It sounded so insensitive. Just go take care of that.
Just go take crying baby. Go take care of your child. No, we're excited to have you back. I'm glad this worked out. We'll be back with you guys after the Ohio State Maryland game. You'll be there, right? That's the plan for you to be there. Obviously, you're raising a child, so if something happens, you can't be there. It's understandable, but we'll plan for you to be there. We'll plan to talk to you guys after the Maryland game. So thanks for listening, and we'll catch you then.